Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
My brand new book, Midwife Pip's Guide to a Positive Birth, is now available. So much more than a book, this is a guide that allows me to hold your hand through your birth preparation journey. With over a decade of experience and knowledge packed in to ensure you really are empowered in the way you deserve to achieve a positive birth, regardless of the twists and turns that crop up. Make sure that you get your hands on Midwife Pip's Guide to a Positive Birth book now and are empowered to have the birth experience that you deserve. Hello, I'm Pip and welcome to the Midwife Pip podcast, the home of expert information and real chats on all things pregnancy, birth and beyond. Remember, as a podcast listener, you can get 15% off my online courses at midwifepip.com using the code PODCAST15. Giving birth is often compared to a marathon, a long journey that requires grit, endurance, pacing, patience, pain management, and motivation to stay on track. This week's guest, Dr. Carla, is a sports psychologist and explains how pregnant women can use mental strategies commonly adopted by sports people to help focus on their strengths and to see the childbirth experience as a positive challenge instead of a threat. So welcome, Carla, and thank you very much for coming on the podcast today.
Hi, Pip. Yeah, very excited to be on the podcast.
I love this topic, Carla. I absolutely love it because I think your ethos is so well needed in a time where we kind of live really in an epidemic of birth fear. So many people are fearful of birth. So often women feel like they're going to be out of control or like there's nothing in their grasp that they can utilize or have kind of the reins over when it comes to birth. So I find it really interesting, the work you do. And I wonder what's kind of led you personally, if we can jump straight in, to explore the link between sports psychology and how that crosses over so well into birth, even if we didn't realize it beforehand.
Yeah, definitely. Well, there's a couple of different things that kind of inspired me to write the book. So first off, a lot of my work as a sports psychologist, so both as a practitioner, as a researcher, is around endurance performance. So she already alluded to, like, when you think about the mental demands of endurance performance, they're at motivation, you're on your feet or bike, whatever endurance event you're doing for a long time. So a lot of time to think, those demons that come in, how do you manage those? You know, that component of pacing, you can't go out all the time at full effort. And, you know, like managing pain and discomfort, you know, they're all kind of psychological demands typical to endurance performance. And you compared it to a marathon. So I guess some of those seeds started to be planted when I was pregnant myself without really being aware of that at the time. And then my research also looks at challenge and threat states. So like, how do you see something as a positive challenge and not as a negative threat? So, you know, things like self-belief, seeing, you know, it as an approaching, rather seeing it head, you know, hit the situation head on, like not digging your head in the sand type thing, as well as kind of that notion of control that you already talked about, helps to kind of see something as a positive challenge, which has beneficial physiological responses associated to it as well, which is helpful when it comes to giving birth. So again, some seeds were planted on the way. And then obviously my own birth story. So that was pretty much an endurance feat. So from the time my water broke till I actually gave birth, we're talking about 50 hours. So that was quite some time of pushing through, you know, pain and discomfort and pacing myself and literally drawing on every bit of like psychological strategies that I'm teaching to my students, teaching to athletes that I'm doing research on. And I just start to realize how beneficial this was. And I noticed that when I started to drift off and not necessarily using some of those psychological strategies that really affected my experience. So I started to really realize, actually, there's something here. And then I had some conversations with other women when, you know, they've given birth and their birth stories. And what I noticed is that during their kind of, you know, birthing classes, they were learning about breathing, using mantras, positive self-talk statements, and had all these really good intentions to use those, but they forgot about it because they didn't really use opportunities to practice those strategies. So there was really that kind of action, intention gap, really good intentions. It didn't translate into action. And I was like, well, that seems such a kind of a lost opportunity. Is there something we can do? And so many women have experiences of doing sports or exercise, have pushed through pain and discomfort, you know, needed to find some motivation, or, you know, in endurance, you know, battling some of those thoughts and those demons and finding out what's within their control, outside of their control. Can we pull that together into a book? And I did some research, there was nothing out there. And I was like, oh, maybe there's something here. Wasn't quite sure. So I put together a book proposal during my maternity leave. It was lockdown, so nothing better to do. I guess there were better things to do.
I mean, but you could have taken up a new hobby, done some knitting.
Exactly. So I put something together. I sent it to the partner of one of my old PhD students who was a midwife at the time to have a look at it. And she's like, yeah, actually, that's really interesting. I think you got something here. So I guess that gave me the confidence boost I needed to then start to approach like publishing companies. So I wrote one chapter around challenge and threat today. So how can you see it as a positive challenge? Send it across with a book proposal, got a yes immediately, and kind of so the book writing started.
Wow, very exciting. And my goodness, I mean, what a journey. The way you describe it like that kind of makes it sound like it was a very simple transition. But I know that that process takes a lot of determination. So thank you, because it's something that will really support women, I think, moving forwards. And some of the stuff that you do discuss in your book, so specifically the kind of psychological strategies that you've already kind of started to allude to in terms of setting and adapting our goals, self-talk, breathing, mindfulness, that support network and focus. Can you explain a little bit more about how these relate to birth? Because as an ex-runner, because I feel like since having my son, the amount of running I do, I can't really claim to be a runner anymore. But I was marathon training prior to falling pregnant with him. And so it really resonates with me, a lot of what you talk about. I'm like, yes. And instinctively, without trying to practice, I utilize those techniques in birth, because as you say, it was inbred in me. I'd done that. So I knew that's what I knew. It was my go-to. And that's where I think when we sometimes talk about breathing practice and mindfulness in pregnancy in relation to birth, we really miss out on that practice element. And that's where it kind of just gets missed. And that intention, as you say, into action, there's a big old gap that doesn't really set us up in the best way we could have, I suppose.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Yeah, 100%. I think when we look at the aim of the book, it's really to kind of pull together some of those mental strategies, and rather than trying to start from scratch, is actually building what you've already got in your toolbox. So to help you approach that birth as kind of a positive challenge. And I think what's really important before we kind of dive into some of those psychological strategies is that you kind of want to understand what the purpose is of using a strategy. And I think this is sometimes where this action intention gap starts. It's because we don't really understand what the if is that we're going to use it for. So are we using it because we're lacking confidence, so we want to boost our self-efficacy? Is it, you know, because giving birth, if it's too fast, you've never done it before, so you can't really draw on those previous performances, you know? Or is it more about focus? You feel like your mind's going everywhere and you're really struggling to focus on the task, being in the here and now? Or is it to focus on motivation, pushing through pain, discomfort? You know, that's a really important starting point, to understand what it is that you want to use it for. And then you've got like a range of psychological strategies available to you. And some of those you might use all the time. And then there's some that you only need in particular situations, a bit like a toolbox, right? Like you've got some multi-purpose tools that you go to all the time. And then there's some that are quite unique and you can only use in like maybe a couple of instances, but they're instrumental to be successful. And what's really important there is that practice element. You know, if you have a flat tire in your car and you've never used a jack before to like lift up the tire, well, it's not going to happen, right? Yeah. So it's important that you need to unwrap those psychological strategies and really give yourself an opportunity to practice that. And there's for something like what we call self-regulated learning in sports psychology. It's really important. It's that plan, why are you using it, act, do it, and then especially that reflect bit. So if you've had any experiences in sport, you're talking about your marathon training, you know, you plan maybe how you're going to pace yourself, then you're going to do it, and then you're going to reflect, well, actually, I went off a little bit too fast. So maybe I just need to tune into my effort levels, reduce that a little bit, and maybe do a little bit more research on the course. Because actually, it was a bit windier than I thought that bit. So that's why it felt a little bit harder. So that's when I need to slow down a bit. Or actually, there is where I could have pushed through a little bit more. And my mind was all over the place. I started thinking about all these hundreds of different things. Okay, well, that wasn't very useful, but that was. So it's that kind of plan, act, reflect. It's really important. So I think sometimes people dive in too quickly into learning because they don't know what they're using it for. And if you don't know what you're using it for, under pressure, you're not going to.
Yeah, and then there's no motivation to practice, is there? Because you're exactly. Like, well, you know, you don't really understand the significance or what it's about and how valuable that might be to you.
Exactly. So I think that's really important. And you want to start early in the maternity journey. So really give yourself a good opportunity to practice these different strategies. You know, in yoga sessions, like if you're lucky enough to be able to do some running, you know, not all of our bodies are able to do that when we're pregnant, but some of them are. And so, you know, can you start practicing some of these things whilst you're pregnant, maybe presentations at work when there's some pressure, you can, you know, practice it then, or reflect on times when you've used it when you were doing exercise or competitive sport. So I think that's always really important to think about when we're kind of talking about these different psychological strategies, rather than going straight into, well, let's use some goal setting or yeah, let's use some self-talk without actually knowing why you're using it. So thinking about those kind of different strategies, but also for the different stages, right, of giving birth, I'm sure we get to at some of those strategies. You want to adapt them. You need very different strategies for the starting point and for the end point, which hopefully will be kind of a useful takeaway message as well to kind of adapt. So you've got your favorite psychological strategies, but you also got the ones that will be useful at different stages.
Yeah, that's such a good point. And I think that's where that having that understanding of the physiology of birth alongside what strategies are going to be best suited to what area is so valuable, because you know that latent phase where we're relaxed and we're at home, we're carrying on, is very different to the final stage of labor and birth where you're literally pushing your baby out. You know, the way we want our minds to work, is the way we want the neurocortex to be taking over, is very different as well.
Yeah, 100%. I think that's, you know, for you as a midwife, that's so helpful as well, isn't it, to kind of the adaptation of those psychological strategies to different stages of birth, like motivational self-talk, which we can have a chat about. You know, you probably need that at those pushing stages when you really, you know, it comes out of the bottom of your toes to, you know, push. And what's helpful at that stage, I think, is definitely something to consider. But yeah, there's a whole bunch of psychological strategies. Shall we start with goal setting? Is that?
Yeah, go for it. Go for it. You kick off where you want. You're the pro.
So yeah, well, I think we had a really nice interview, didn't we? So I'm sure we get to some of the things that he talks about when in your interview. So for the book, I've interviewed different women, Olympians, exercisers, personal trainers, yourself, to kind of understand how they've used their different. How how they kind of use those different strategies themselves as part of their kind of birth stories. So I guess one of the ones that seems to come up time and time again is the whole idea of goal setting. So when, you know, we're in that kind of, you know, pregnancy journey and we're starting to think about giving birth, I think most women, not everyone, but a lot of women, they start to pull together a birth plan. And I'm sure, you know, you've as a midwife, you've seen a whole variety of different birth plans. But what you also find is that a lot of times these birth plans are going overboard quite quickly. Things aren't necessarily as you'd expect. The baby starts doing different things, or maybe you don't respond and you decide that actually you don't want to have your home birth and you want to go to hospital. And that's okay. I think that's the first thing to emphasize. It's okay if the birth plan
is flexible. It's flexible.
Going overboard. Exactly. And I think that's when it comes to goal setting, kind of one of the things that I talk a lot about with endurance athletes is to move away from this kind of one do or die goal. So quite often when it comes to, you know, a marathon, people have this like, oh, I need to run a sub whatever hour race. What that does, it adds a lot of pressure because sometimes, you know, you've had a tough week at work, you haven't had a lot of sleep, and actually it's not going to happen. But if you then have a bit of goal flexibility, so you've got your dream goal, that's that sub whatever hour time, but then you can also have your happy goal and kind of your acceptable goal. Maybe that's just finishing the race, and allowing yourself some flexibility really relieves some of that pressure. Mm-hmm. And that translates so well to, you know, when we're thinking about birth plans, having that flexibility, having a plan A, having a plan B, and having a plan C. So when plan A doesn't happen and you go to plan B, you already have that in place. So you don't have to, you know, go through the whole process of sometimes a bit of grief of letting go of that plan, because you've already started to think about actually, okay, well, plan A wasn't on the cards. That's fine. I still got a plan B and I got a plan C. And sometimes you go back from a plan B to plan A. You know, maybe you want to water birth, then quite, you know, maybe you're not quite sure what's going to happen, but actually things start to settle and you can go back to it. And that's okay. So I think having that goal flexibility is really important. Another thing that we have in sports psychology is kind of different types of goals. So we talk about performance outcome goals, which is like a time based, or, you know, beating someone or placing, you know, on the you know, first three, getting a medal, or kind of performance and kind of outcome goals, which are really helpful because they can help with our training plans and, you know, boost that motivation. But actually what they don't give us is a lot of control. So these are very much external goals. You know, someone else might have a really good day, or, you know, the conditions on the day won't allow that kind of performance-based time goal. So really what we need to start focusing on a lot more, especially in action, is process goals. So that's more of how you're going to do it. So your breathing technique, maybe self-talk plans, you know, your positioning, like how you push training, you know, those types of things are really important. And that's so much more within your control. Mm-hmm. And because that's more within your control, it gives you that autonomy, it gives you that confidence. So when we think about challenge and threat states, you know, what makes someone in a challenge state is that notion of perceived control. So knowing what's inside and outside of your control. It's that notion of hitting the situation head on, that approach motivation, and it's about the self-efficacy. So really, you know, the different sources that go in there is performance, accomplishments, you know, seeing other people in a similar boat performing well, you know, doing well, succeeding, you know, positive self-talk, confidence about your physiological state, that you can fight through some of that fatigue and so on. So taken together, kind of process goals can really feed into some of those aspects that lead to a challenge state, a kind of positive approach. So that's another thing that we work on with athletes a lot, in terms of, you know, yes, sure, performance and outcome goals, they serve a purpose, but actually in the moment they're not going to do much for you. I remember that you started to talk in our interview a lot about clock watching.
Oh, it's a nightmare.
And that's such an example of like a performance goal, because you're like, oh, in all my knowledge, I know this is supposed to happen now, and this is, you know, like so many hours from now, this needs to happen. And so much of that is out of your control. So moving that away, I think, you know, what you did is you then had someone remove all the clocks as like a solution towards that. And we can kind of go back to that when we talk about focus strategies. But that's such an example of like a performance goal. So we want to move away from that and thinking about process goals and, you know, maybe focusing on your breathing, focusing on, you know, like anxiety management, pain control, and so on is so much more helpful in the moment. And then, you know, yes, if your birth plan isn't entirely what you wanted it to be, it's not the end of the world. So I think that's kind of some things that come with goal setting. Things like chunking is really important. So rather than seeing, you know, the whole maternity journey, I guess, you know, you got the 9 or so months leading up to it, you can chunk that down into different pieces and set goals for different parts of your maternity journey. You know, in the beginning, it's really about resting and getting your body ready for, you know, the baby growing. You can't do as much in terms of your exercise because you're just shattered. You're just so tired.
Oh, I'm vomiting and ugh.
Exactly. Like your body's just getting ready and that's okay. So it's kind of that pacing. So you set like maybe a process goal of pacing. And then, you know, when you feel more energy, you can then adjust your goals. And then, you know, what can you do in the later stages? And then it's the same with, you know, the actual childbirth is, you know, you've got all those different stages. And setting different process goals for those different stages and breaking it down and chunking it is such a powerful thing. So when I was told that, I don't know, I was induced, and then there was like, I don't know, I've been pushing or like going through contractions for quite a few hours. And then I was told, oh, it's only 3 hours to go until the baby comes out. And I was like, oh, that's a heck of a lot of contractions to go. And what we did to kind of manage that was we calculated how many contractions that approximately was. And then, so we chunked it and then just like swiped a contraction off the table every time. Mm-hmm. So really kind of then focused on that process, and we used chunking as a goal setting tool to kind of not look at the end goal, but actually being in the moment. And then
I was just thinking back then to one of the things I did with a lady in labor once where again, she wanted like a tick list to tick off the contraction. So we had two jars, one that was full of jelly beans and one that was empty. And every time she had a contraction, we put a jelly bean into the other jar. And that power was like, tick, you know, that's one more contraction done. It kind of chunked that little bit down for her that way.
Exactly. And that's a really nice visual tool, and it's active, and you can engage your birth partner in that process as well. So there's so many nice things that you can do when it comes to goal setting to really give the woman a sense of control, empower her, and rather than focusing all these other things that are out of your control that are just causing pressure, having those process goals, chunking, and you know, I talked about if then planning at the start, that's also part of goal setting, isn't it? Understanding the why. What might be some critical situations that you could encounter, like when the pain becomes too much. If I feel overwhelmed by the pain, then I will do this.
Yeah.
So think about some of those strategies. Is then a key thing of reducing that action, you know, that gap between intention and action.
Yes, I love it. I love it. Anyway, carry on. It's very interesting.
So I guess that's goal setting as a bit of a snapshot of what's in the book. So there's obviously a lot more in there. So another thing, and you've got a really fantastic example here. So I'm looking forward to you sharing your example rather than me trying to repeat the example you gave in an interview. It's around imagery. So imagery is also a really powerful strategy, a little bit more challenging sometimes to learn compared to, you know, goal setting. Because when we think about imagery, it's kind of defined as creating or recreating experiences in our mind using all our different senses. So it's not just vision. So obviously a lot of people think about imagery as visualization, but it's just one of our senses. So it's also, you know, like sometimes you feel that you have this really dry mouth in labor. So that's, you know, the taste, what you feel, you know, what you hear, you know, all those different senses, what you smell. You know, the hospital smells are very different compared to, you know, the home. Like there's a lot of senses that are being encouraged to use in labor. So using all your different senses to either create or recreate an experience in your mind is what makes imagery. And you can use it for so many different purposes. So again, it's about understanding why you're using it. So sometimes women use it to distract themselves from the pain. So they might use something called dissociative imagery. So maybe imagining being in a really happy place or recreating an experience from a holiday. There's different things, or kind of visualizing or imagining that the pain leaves their body with every breath. is another way of looking at it. Or maybe using imagery to see the pain as your friend rather than your enemy is another way of looking at it. So one of the things that we need to be a little bit cautious with when it comes to dissociative imagery is that you don't want to be stuck in that all the time, because pain obviously serves a purpose. And I'm sure as a midwife, you know this very well, is that if you forget to tune into the pain, then sometimes you don't pick up some warning signals that are really important to communicate to the health professionals around you. So yes, it's a good tool to sometimes help yourself with a bit of pain relief, but don't you do it all the time without forgetting to check in on your body. I think is a really important kind of bit of caution.
Keeping that kind of awareness, isn't it, alongside, but having it as a strategy to support you.
Yeah, 100%. And the other thing when it comes to imagery is that, so we use it all the time, right? When you're driving somewhere or cycling or walking, you're kind of imagining the route you're going to take, you know, what's there on the right, what's there on the left. And that's quite normal. But sometimes what happens is the imagery takes over. So what's really important is that you maintain that kind of autonomy over your imagery. So rather than it taking over you. So I always give this example of like a runner who imagines that, you know, they're racing towards the end. And then suddenly in their imagery, they see someone overtaking them every single time. So they have really powerful, really vivid imagery, but they don't have any control over imagining a positive outcome. So it's really important that it's vivid, using all your senses, that you're aware of what's going on and that you are having control over it. And often why you lose control over it is because you're going into very complex imagery very quickly. So what you want to do, and as I talk about this a little bit in the book, is this kind of layered stimulus response training, is that you want to start very basic. Can you imagine, let's say, a black circle, or and then change it in your mind to a yellow circle? And then kind of, you know, moving on to that and building on that is a really important thing. So you feel confidence that you can do that imagery. And I think you had a really fantastic example of how you used imagery for technical purposes. So to kind of engage with your breathing, you're talking, I think, about a yellow balloon.
Oh, yes. The yellow balloon. Do you want me to explain that?
Yeah.
So people that have done my courses will be familiar with the yellow. But yellow is just the color that came to my mind. So you can totally imagine any color balloon. But when I, in the first stage of labor, where the main thing that's happening internally to our bodies on a kind of physiological level is that our cervix is being pulled upwards into the sides of our uterus. So we want to connect our breath with the same direction that our body is working, i.e. upwards. So during an upward breath in the first stage, I recommend having a colored balloon, mine's always yellow, deflated in your pelvis. And as you inhale and take that lovely big deep breath upwards, that balloon inflates upwards to essentially fill your entire abdomen. So then you've got a nice big full balloon in your abdomen. And then as you exhale, we continue in an upward motion to support that cervix, but the balloon floats out of our abdomen and up into the sky. So we're still moving upwards. And that's a technique that I use during my own birth and that I teach on my courses as well, because I think it works. It's powerful. I've seen it work. And I really found it helpful in my own birth.
Yeah, definitely. And I really love that example. Made it into the book. So
good.
Hopefully people will, they can resonate with it or kind
There'll
of practice
it. Lots of yellow balloons in people's minds.
Yeah. But again, it's really important. It's personal to you, isn't it? So, you know, they might visualize something else that might inflate or, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
It resonates for them. So again, with imagery, it's important you have control over it and that you have those kind of stimulus. You know, what's the situation? Can you imagine the situation? Can you imagine the responses? So like the heart rate maybe going up, the sounds that you can hear, but also the meaning associated to it. So can you then imagine it being a positive challenge rather than a negative threat? So, you know, combined, that's really powerful to have that kind of positive imagery. But it takes practice. So I think with imagery, it's not something you can expect to just apply in, you know, a pressurized situation like giving birth when there's so many new things going on if you haven't practiced it before. So, you know, maybe if you're doing pregnancy yoga, that's a time where you can maybe imagine that the pain's leaving your body when you're in a bit of a challenging pose, or, you know, when you're going for a long walk and, you know, maybe your pelvic is a little bit uncomfortable. You know, maybe you can imagine how you can adjust the way you're walking to relieve some of that strain. So there's different things you can do. And again, for those different purposes, so always kind of understand why are you using it and then implement, for example, a very technical imagery scenario that helps with breathing, or maybe it is about imagining what you're going to eat after you've given birth as like a motivational bit of imagery. So you see this a lot with marathon runners, you know, like obviously London Marathon was on a Sunday. So, you know, what's kind of, you know, your roast dinner afterwards, kind of imagining that you're, you know, getting the medal hung around your neck and then, you know, going to the pub to have a lovely roast dinner can be a really motivational bit of imagery for people.
Yeah, no, my goodness, I can, yeah, imagine that. And quite often after birth, especially women that perhaps for certain reasons, like diabetes, have had to mitigate what they're eating, there's often a lot of chocolate biscuits eaten after the birth of a baby. The ultimate refuel.
the sushi was the first thing that kind of came into the room.
Nice.
Yeah, sushi and a bit of like soft cheese.
Soft cheese, yeah. Rare steak, that would be on my list for sure.
Yeah, so, you know, things like that can be really, you know, sometimes it's just to lighten spirit, right? To think about some of these things, imagine what you might be having afterwards can really kind of, yeah, boost that motivation when you just feel so tired and you just need that bit of energy booster.
Yeah, definitely. And like you say, it's having a toolbox of techniques. It's not that it's kind of right, we've got this one thing and we're going to roll with it. It's having different things that you can dip and dive from as you need and as the journey unfolds and those twists and turns kind of crop up. And one of the things I'm thinking is, Carla, for those listening who perhaps have done a little bit of sport, maybe it was at school or university and life's got in the way, they haven't really done anything since. Compared to those that are perhaps training at an elite level, how can we utilize these strategies across all abilities and experiences for women?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. So what I've tried to do in the book is obviously not just interview those from a really high level, because I think that that's great, but not everyone can relate to that. And obviously during pregnancy, you sometimes are not able to exercise either. So if you want to practice those, a lot of times there might be other situations where you might feel under pressure. So, you know, maybe in your job presentations might be an example of like, what are some of the strategies that you draw on to help you prepare and deliver a presentation? Mm-hmm. Maybe you can relive an exam that you've done, like a test, difficult, maybe challenging conversations with families might be something that you can draw on as well. But most people have done some walking or some occasions where they've maybe had to push through some discomfort or, you know, had to draw on effort levels to push through. So think about those situations where, you know, you, because obviously giving birth is a physical thing. So it's definitely helpful to think about some times where maybe you felt a bit out of breath. How did you manage that situation? How did you push through? What were some kind of strategies that maybe helped you to inform your self-belief to make you feel confident that you could do it?
Yeah, that's really useful, actually, to realise that I think we've got more in us than we really understand and realise, haven't we? We are much more capable than we ever believed possible. And I think birth proves that, but it's really nice to go into that knowing it and having that innate confidence in yourself.
Yeah, 100%. I think that's what really inspired me to write this book, because it's like, yeah, it's a nice idea, but I'm not quite sure if people are interested in it initially. But then actually when I had conversations with people, I was actually, yeah, I have. I interviewed women for the book, and actually through those conversations they became aware that they had so much more in them than they thought they had, and they actually used a lot of their previous experiences. And yes, it is a new thing, you might only do it once or twice in your life, so it's quite a unique you know, for some, a one-off experience, but at the same time it's a really life-changing experience for a lot of people. So how can you make that as empowering as you can? And yes, it will be new and there will be a lot of things, but you can also draw on a lot of things you've already developed in your life. And, you know, we talked about a marathon, and, you know, you don't train for a marathon overnight. And it's the same with, you know, giving birth. You need to put in the training hours, and especially also the postpartum period. You know, you're not going to be back within a day, and you need to learn how to be a mom. And you need to, yes, you're a mom over, you know, like when the baby's born, you're a mom, but then actually the identity of a mom takes a long time. Mm. Like, you know, you didn't learn how to, you know, do a layup in basketball in one go either. So it's, you know, what can you learn from how you've learned different skills?
Yeah. Oh, it's so interesting, isn't it? So that mind-body connection is just fascinates me. And I'm so pleased that people like yourself are starting to put a resource out there that women can draw on, because it's really reassuring, I think, especially for those that are perhaps feeling anxious about the concepts of birth and what that might look like for them. Now, Carla, everyone that comes on the podcast, I ask for three top tips. So I wonder if you could share your three top tips for expectant mums who are listening.
Yes, good point. I mean, three. I know you're always asking for three, but there's so many.
It's going to be hard.
So, okay. Let's start with the first one. So the first one I would say is to pace yourself. It's not a competition. And this counts for the lead up as well as the period afterwards. It's your journey at your pace. And as I said, you don't train for a marathon overnight. So why would you for the maternity journey? And then the second thing, and I think this is quite an important one as well, is that notion of perceived control. So really know what's within and outside of your control. So don't mess with the hormones by trying to over control the uncontrollables. I think that's a really key thing. The clock watching example you gave earlier on as well. And even if you try to do everything you could within your control, sometimes things change and that's okay. So having that awareness of what's in your control and outside of your control will really help with letting go when you need to let go. And then the final thing is that self-regulation of plan, act and reflect. So you need to practice and reflect on how it's been to help you understand what's in your toolbox and to really have that belief in the tools in your toolbox that you know that's going to help for you, and you know why you're using the different tools in your toolbox, even though some are rarely used but are very essential for those very particular moments. And you'd only ever know this if you give it a shot and give it a practice and reflect on the effectiveness of it.
Oh, Carla, you're fantastic. I love the work that you do. I love your passion. And yeah, I think it gives people, however into exercise you may be, if you're an expectant mum listening, it gives you some real food for thought into how many techniques and how much strength you actually have in you. Carla, where can people find your book?
So my book is available from the 12th of June. So it's on the kind of, you know, widely available on the kind of, you know, well-known book sites. But you can also order it directly from Sequoia Books, or you can have a look on my website, carlamayan.com, where there's a link to the book as well.
Amazing. Carla, thank you so much. It's been, as always, lovely to chat to you.
Thank you very much.
Before you head off, I just need to tell you something. 68% of you who listen to my podcast have not hit the subscribe button. So can you do me a favor? If you have ever enjoyed listening, and hit subscribe now. It makes a huge difference and helps me to keep bringing you episodes. The bigger the podcast, the bigger the guests, and the more women we can reach and help. Thank you for subscribing, and I look forward to chatting again soon.
Hi, my name is Kay Adams, and to be honest, I'm not so good with the aging process, so I enlisted my old chum, the filter-free Cara McKenzie, to advise.
Could you imagine being a porn star? The room would need to be really hot for me to strip off.
To be honest, she's not much help, but she is rather amusing. And along with some great guests, Joe Brand, Andy Oliver, Anton Dubek, Ruth Langsford, and Craig Revel Horwood, darling, we are learning how to be 60. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.